Hello, I'm Leslie Banks-Hughes, and this is the Ship Energy Podcast. A lot of our podcasts focus on the development and commercialization of new marine fuels, where we're thinking of an energy source for vessels as a gas or liquid that sits in an onboard tank and is topped up periodically. Today, we're going to look at the evolution of marine batteries and the role they're playing in the energizing of ships and in the delivery of the sector's decarbonisation. To explain the application and potential of marine batteries, I'm delighted to welcome Chris Kruger, founder of AYK Energy, who can quite justifiably be called a pioneer of battery technology. So thank you for joining us, Chris.
Good morning. Thank you, Leslie. Nice to be here.
Good. Pleasure. Delighted you can join us. And just for a little bit of background, before we begin the conversation, AYK Energy has recently installed the biggest marine battery in the world on the latest addition to the fleet of the French operator Brittany Ferries. It's for the LNG electric ferry Saint-Malo. AYK is also going to supply batteries for her sister ship, Guillaume de Normandie. And in another project, AYK has also been involved in the retrofit of the H2 barge in the Netherlands. In this project, the vessel's diesel engine was replaced with a fuel system consisting of proton exchange membrane fuel cells, hydrogen storage, AYK battery packs, and an electric drivetrain. So we'll look at these projects in more detail later, as well as your own journey in setting up AYK. But starting with the tech, can you give an overview of lithium iron phosphate battery technology and explain why you believe it's safer and more effective than using nickel manganese cobalt batteries?
Yes, in essence, LFP is much safer chemistry because it is much more violent, less violent during the thermal runaway process. So NMC has a violent reaction when it goes into thermal runaway, and it propagates through the process of overheating and outgassing very flammable gases very quickly. LFP will have the same gases because electrolyte is the same, but it does not propagate very fast through that temperature. It moves more slowly, and therefore it's not as violent a reaction. So as the batteries get bigger and bigger, the LFP is definitely the safer chemistry that we have to use in applications like transport where there's people involved.
Okay, and can you tell us sort of other industry sectors where LFP is commonly used as a battery technology?
Today, LFP is the most common chemistry in the world. The raw materials are more cost-effective. The batteries are cheaper because it's safe. It is used in all sectors. Even the Tesla has some of its models with the LFP chemistry. So it is definitely the chemistry of choice today.
Okay, good to know. And I mean, can you say a little bit as well about, you know, the particular challenges in using batteries in a maritime environment? It's not the friendliest of environments, is it?
No. So, you know, if you have a stationary battery and it catches fire, you just let it burn. If it's in a container and it doesn't put anything else on fire, you just let it burn and you walk away from it. If you have a car, of course, it's not nice, but even with a car, you can get out and walk away. With a vessel, it's not so much. You're in the middle of the ocean, or at least it will take some time to get to a place where people can get off the vessel. So you really have to make sure safety is of the utmost importance. So the safety systems are absolutely important. And not just the thermal runaway safety, this is all safeties. You need to make sure that the battery can actually operate in that environment. Another challenge is common mode noise. I don't want to go into it in too much detail, but vessels, by their design, has a floating power system, electrical power system, and that enhances the problem of common mode noise. So common mode noise is definitely one of the more difficult things that has to be dealt with in a marine environment.
Okay, and obviously, you know, you've touched on safety there. I just wonder, sort of looking, when we look at vessel design, you know, is everything in place for ships to use battery propulsion? And how supportive have the class societies been in providing notations for vessels equipped with batteries?
The class societies have been very, very supportive. The very first battery in 2010 that we did in Corvus Energy, actually 2011, we already had DNV on site and they already had rules out. And all the other glass societies follow suit. So most glass societies today have rules and are very supportive. They get updated as we, it's a new industry, so as we continue, they get updated. For sure, batteries and electrical propulsion is not new to the marine industry. So batteries is just another power source instead of having a diesel generator or a dual fuel generator. It's just another type of generation or storage of energy. It's just storing the energy directly into a lump of chemicals that can be released.
Okay. And maybe if we can sort of wind back to the beginning a little bit, and if you can explain a bit or discuss a little bit about your own background in battery technology and what was the catalyst? What prompted you to set up AYK?
Yeah, I'm an electrical engineer by training, and I spent quite a bit of time in the semiconductor industry until I say, well, this is just a rat race. I don't want to be part of this anymore. So I, at that point in time, I was in a stage of my life where I was looking, what's the next thing I want to do? And I really wanted to do something in green technologies. It was just up and coming back then, solar and so on. I realized at that time that the battery is really needed by all of the renewables. They are not continuous, therefore you need some sort of storage, and batteries are obvious place. So I started with the automotive industry with Fisker Karma. I led the team that designed their first battery for them that was actually on the track in Monaco. And from there on, I moved into marine. Being in Vancouver at that time, that's a marine environment, and the battery technology was really centered around Maple Ridge there with E1 Moly. This is really where the lithium ion technology started back in the 80s already. From there, it evolved because the marine battery market was really driven by Norway. I'm not going to go into the reasons for that, history for that, but driven by Norway, and I decided to move to Norway. Decided Norway is like Vancouver. It's a little bit cold. I'm from South Africa originally. I'll go to Spain. And today I'm residing in Andorra. And during this journey of developing the batteries and seeing how much it costs and how prohibitive it is, customers want to use this technology, but it's just so very expensive. The electrical drivetrain is already more expensive. Now you add the batteries on top of that, and it becomes at the point where people can't do it. And let's not kid ourselves. People will install this new technology if it saves them money. If it doesn't save them money, then in the end, they are not going to do this. So eventually I did some work in China. I did start doing some engineering in China, and I realized that this is where the center of battery technology is. And to get the cost out of the battery is the main reason that I decided that China is the place to go to. You are very close to the supply chain. You are where all the new developments in the battery technology is happening. Most of it, I shouldn't say all of it, but we can see that China is definitely the leader. And therefore, this is the obvious choice to set up your business close to where the technology happened.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you actually chose China right from the get-go as your manufacturing base?
Absolutely, even the engineering base. When I started AYK, okay, I realized that it will be difficult. I know it would be difficult to get money in China, but I realize it will be futile to try and do something outside of China and move it into China. So I needed to set up the company in China. And I was very lucky to have good partners, good technology partners with me, some of my fellow founders. And together we walked the road until where we are today.
Okay, can we perhaps discuss a little bit more kind of like what setting up a business in China looks like in practice? I mean, how how challenging is it in reality?
It's, it's got a lot to do with luck, hard work and luck. You know, if you're not ready when something happened, then you cannot take the advantage. Something might not happen. So China is definitely a different environment. It's very challenging. The culture is different. The investment culture is a lot different, and it takes some getting used to. So the biggest problem for us is to get the people to be excited about the technology. There was a lot of money back in 2018, a lot of money in China that was looking for a place to go. Today is not like that anymore. It's a lot more difficult. So the biggest challenge really in China was getting the money. to do the development. There's some other piece of luck that happened. You know, I happened to meet the head of the group, of the marine group of EVE, which is a big cell manufacturer that couldn't get a marine battery for outside China developed. And he gave me a challenge and he gave me labs to work in. And without that kind of leg up to be able to have a place to develop the battery, it would have been a lot more difficult. Up to that point, we developed the BMS, but we haven't done the battery at all, really. So there's a lot of luck involved with this, for sure.
Exactly. I mean, is there a sort of defined process of trying to raise investment, find investors, or is it, as you say, very much a case of happenstance in some respect?
When you start out like we did, you talk to everybody. Talk to everybody that's possible. And definitely to get good founders, good angels, is a very difficult thing. It's in any case difficult to work with angels, but in China it was particularly challenging because of the cultural differences. Luckily, I had my Chinese partners; otherwise, it wouldn't have been possible. But once you are there, now it becomes a structured thing. Today, I've got my second tier founders are really involved with the business. They drank the Kool-Aid, so to speak. So they came on board with me, and they are now. Of course, owners, but also managing the company together with me. And this is a structured way of approaching the raising of capital. You have to go through all the different steps and talk to everybody and see where it's possible.
Yes, yeah, absolutely. I mean, sort of, you know, hindsight's a wonderful thing. But I mean, just looking back in terms of setting up that manufacturing engineering facility in China, is there anything maybe you might have done differently?
You know, at this time, or at the time that we did this, we came through the COVID year. So really luck was on our side that we were immune to the COVID problem because of the way we did the development. We already did development with, let's say, splinter satellite groups. It wasn't one office where we did all the development. We know exactly what we wanted to do, so it was a lot easier. I think the only thing I would say is you should try and get to the market more quickly. But the market acceptance is also a problem, so you can't move too fast. I think the circumstances drive us to where we are today, and it's a unique set of circumstances that made it possible for us to be successful. If anything has gone wrong somewhere along the way, it might have been a different story. So it's definitely got a lot to do with that.
Mm-hmm. Moving forward, I mean, would you consider expanding production to other geographical locations? Do you think the investment landscape is a little bit more kind of welcoming to sort of production, or is it still going to be particularly expensive?
No, absolutely. So the benefit of being in China is you are where the battery technology is developed. Therefore, you get access to all the newest discoveries that people do. You know, if you have a huge number of companies working on the same problem, it becomes a nucleus, and you can pick up the good things from that and maybe enhance it a little bit and change it to work for you. If you're not in China, then you're really far removed from where all of this happens, and it's a lot more difficult to do something like that. So the development and the factory will always be in China. But having said that, it's difficult to be far away from your customers. So lithium ion is difficult to transport, and it's really easier to transport the cells and transport the battery itself after it's been manufactured. So it makes sense to set up factories closer to the user base as well. So with that in mind, we most likely will set up factories somewhere in Europe. I haven't decided where yet, but most likely this is the direction that we will go in the next year or two.
Okay. So if you maybe switch the conversation to the sort of the actual technology that you're working with, and I mentioned at the top of the conversation the project with Brittany Ferries and also with the H2 Barge initiative. So, I mean, can you just explain a little bit about those two projects and maybe drill down and look at why they're so interesting in terms of the evolving battery tech market?
Well, the hydrogen barge is a hydrogen fuel cell, and the nature of a hydrogen fuel cell is that it doesn't like to change its output quickly. It can give the same output very stable for a long period, but when it changes, when you need more power or when you need to produce less power, it takes some time for it to adjust to that. So For that reason, you need to have batteries. You always need batteries with a fuel cell as well, just a little bit smaller batteries. So in this case, was it showing that the technology is capable of integrating the fuel cell with the battery. And that's what made the barge so very interesting. That's the initiative that that will probably, if fuel cells continue, then this is one of the stepping stones entering that market. On the Brittany Ferry side, this is the largest battery today in the industry that's installed. Not for very long, there will be more. We see more and more bigger RFQs coming out, and probably 26 we'll see quite large batteries being installed. So what makes that so interesting is that it's the first time that we have this many LFP batteries working together to supply very high power. People are under the misconception that LFP cannot do high power, and it's NMC that can do the high power. There are some characteristics there, of course, but the LFP, the form factor we use is prismatic cells, and therefore the cooling is a very big cell. The cooling becomes more difficult. But for this environment where we need to do a short high power pulse, we took a 12 megawatt hour battery and we pulled 19 megawatts from it for several minutes in one of the stages of the vessel entering the harbor. So to prove that the battery can actually do that and can do that effectively was a challenge, and it shows that now that we're successful, it shows that LFP is suitable for this kind of operation.
Okay, and just going back quickly to the H2 barge project, obviously that was a retrofit project, and I just wonder sort of how feasible you think retrofits or battery technology is going to be to use in the retrofit market. We've seen obviously in the fuel market, say for LNG, for example, that was quite prohibitively expensive, certainly in the early days of LNG. I mean, and what are the prospects like for batteries?
Well, if you have electrical drivetrain, then it's a no-brainer. It's very quickly. So if you have an internal combustion engine that directly drives the prop, if it's a direct drive, it doesn't make sense. It's a huge amount of money. But if you look at the retrofit or adding the battery to the mix, this already in 2012 with the Princess Benedicta was a huge success story. The biggest saving there is spinning reserve. So definitely hybrid and retrofit hybrid is one of the big markets still out there. And there's many opportunities to convert. New builds are coming along, but I think the retrofit market is definitely, as far as the number of projects are concerned, is bigger. The new builds, there are very big batteries coming on new builds. If you put a 80 or 160 megawatt hour battery on the vessel, you need to plan it. This is not something you just retrofit. But the 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 megawatt hour is something that definitely can be retrofitted.
Okay. And I mean, we're very used to sort of hearing about projects and news announcements for the use of battery technology in the short sea, coastal and inland sectors, very much so in sort of Northwest Europe, definitely. I just wonder, you do get some people talking about battery technology and saying there's never going to be an application for the deep sea sector. So I just wondered if you could say a few words about how you think the range of batteries might be extended in the future.
Well, the first obvious thing is higher energy densities. So the higher energy densities will come with solid state batteries. It has its own challenges, but we are definitely going to see some move in that direction. Maybe not the 5 times improvement, but the 2 times improvement is, and it's already make it very interesting. But that is in the near future to mid-range future, 5 to 10 years kind of time frame that we're going to start seeing that becoming commercially available. The obvious other choice is to do container swapping. Now, if you think of crossing the ocean with a container swap, you have to think of the logistics of that. You will have to have a floating wind farm somewhere that can charge your battery. So it is still kind of wishful thinking, but it does get into the range of possibility. It is not completely sci-fi anymore. But for the foreseeable future, I would say the near sea shipping is really where the battery will shine. And container swapping will work there as well, by the way. You know, our biggest problem is shore power, really. This is how do you charge a vessel? So the container swapping is one of the ways of overcoming that, where you can take the battery and move it to a location where it can be charged that's not close to shore, and you can bring the battery back to be used again. So I think containerized, and not just a 20-foot container size, but any kind of swappable battery is already in small quantities being used in different areas in marine. And I think that will just become bigger and bigger as we go forward.
Okay, that's interesting. And I mean, we're talking, I suppose we've been talking today about batteries being used for sort of primary propulsion for vessels. But I mean, I would guess there are a myriad of other opportunities to use batteries on board ship. So can you explain a little bit about what those could be or probably are being?
Yeah, so the most obvious is your spinning reserve. So that is, if you have a diesel electric vessel, then you have always one diesel turning over just in case you have a blackout. So you don't need to do that anymore. That's one of the biggest ones. And then on top of that, you get the peak shaving. You know, a diesel doesn't like to have a variable load. So anything where you have a variable load, like if you do the offshore supply vessels, they are very, there's many reasons why the load is not constant. So there your peak shaving becomes a very important factor to make it better. You can think the primary propulsion is, of course, a big deal, but the fact that you can use a battery, but you get an added advantage to the primary propulsion is the responsiveness. You don't have to wait for a generator to wind up. You can use the battery immediately. Of course, the standard blackout prevention for your hotel load is a big advantage that you have there as well. So it's the battery is really making the vessel a lot more user-friendly and easier to handle.
Okay. And maybe kind of looking at the battery market, though, from the commercial perspective, in terms of the number of companies, the players in the market, it does seem to be quite a sort of active environment. I just wonder, how do you see the sector evolving? And as with any maturing market, you know, are we beginning to see signs of consolidation in terms of the number of companies in the market?
Yeah, we haven't seen consolidation yet. I think we're not at that stage yet. It probably will happen in the future at some point, especially when the market is really getting active. You will get people starting to combine to take bigger portions of the market. Today, we have a few big players in the marine market, not very many, actually. You've got smaller guys, but the guys that install big batteries, it's just a few. Of course, we are starting to see the Chinese companies, the big Chinese companies, starting to step into the industry. Although the industry, the Chinese entering the market will definitely drive the cost down, like it goes with anything that they put their hands to. They have the money to be able to do that. But the marine is not a simple place. We had some cases where people have type-approved batteries. Chinese companies had type-approved batteries that they tried to install on a vessel and just could not get it to work for various reasons. I'm not going to go into detail on that. So this is not a easy nut to crack. And our approach to this is that we can compete with the Chinese companies. Maybe we cannot drive the cost down as low as they can, but we can definitely bring the technology and get close to where they want to go to because of the fact that we are in China. So I think when they start entering the market, we will see a lot of consolidation. There will be necessity to consolidate and become bigger to address the market effectively.
Okay.
But not yet today.
Not quite tomorrow.
Not yet. Maybe in the next year we're going to start seeing it.
Okay. So, I mean, you've alluded to maybe solid state being on the horizon for battery technology in the future. So, I mean, looking at your company, AYK, what's next for your company?
Of course, we're looking at sodium. We're looking at solid state. We're looking at all the different things. So the problem with solid state is the cost. And there are a few other small technical challenges that comes into play. You really need to think of would the customer accept something? A light battery, a very big market today is the high-speed ferries. So they really are the guys driving part of this market. But it's not going to be forever. There's just so many high-speed ferries out there. So a light battery is very important. But if you have to pay a lot for it, 2-3 times for it, would you do that? That's a question. So the solid state will give you the range extension, but there's a lot of other things that has to come with it. You need to get the cost down. You need to get the lifetime up. And these challenges are, you know, I would say for a semi-solid, which takes it to about 300 to 400, 400 is a high end, 300 watt hour per kilogram, maybe 350 watt hour per kilogram at the cell level. That is in the next two years or so, we will start seeing that. But to get to that 800 to 1,000 watt hour per kilogram, where you use a solid lithium anode, that's still 5 to 10 years out. And I think the commercial side is the biggest driver there. You know, how do you make this cost effectively?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Always comes down to price, doesn't it?
Always, always.
Brilliant. Okay. Well, thanks very much, Chris, for a really interesting conversation. And thanks for taking part in the Ship Energy podcast.
It was my pleasure, Leslie. I really enjoyed it. Thank you. Bye.